So I think we can start. Welcome. This is Computer Science 105, aka Great Insights in Computer Science. Yes, and come in. My name is Monica Babish-Roman, and you have my email there in my office. I am a graduate student in computer science. I'm doing my PhD. And my advisor, Michael Littman, created this class to introduce people who are not necessarily, you know, interested in a career in computer science to the basic concepts in computer science. And I think there's a lot of big variety of student backgrounds. Is this the first class of anybody at Rutgers? Raise your hand if it's your first class. In at Rutgers, just ever. Yeah. No? Okay. That's fine. There are people from all kinds of, you know, some people haven't chosen their majors, but there's people from all kinds of majors. And I set out the syllabus, but we changed the webpage. I'm going to update that on the previous webpage. I'm going to redirect it to this page. That's where I will post, you know, announcements, homeworks, the lecture notes, and all kinds of other things. Make sure you check it regularly. We have three TAs. Chris has taught this class before. He's over there. He taught this class last semester, and so he has a lot of valuable experience. He probably will sometimes raise his hand and correct something I'm saying, hopefully. If I say something wrong, hopefully I won't. But then we have Yan Sheng and Sehun Yi, and they're both teeing for this class for the first time, I think. Sehun is over there. Can you raise your hand? Yeah. And, but we're all very excited to help you guys understand what this class is about. Please, you know, ask us, come to our office hours. You can also it's okay to interrupt me. You're encouraged to interrupt me. If you have any questions, please let me know. I will try to go a certain pace, but if you guys think I'm going too fast or too slow, please stop me. And that's how I'm going to know that, you know, I need to slow down. Or, you know, hopefully it's not going to be, you're going so slow or falling asleep, you know, can we all go faster? But so this class has been called Great Insights in Computer Science. And we are using, you know, top-level instructional technologies, we think. So we are using Sakai for assignments, for emails. Everybody who is registered for this class should receive the emails I'm sending through Sakai. If you're not registered yet, please register so you can get the emails. So Sakai, what it does, it has the roster, and it attaches the roster to, you know, the workspace of the class. And then whenever I send an email, it's automatically going to everybody. So make sure you're registered. And there's also iClickers that I ask you all to purchase if you have. How many people have gotten an iClicker? Oh, wow. Okay, great. Thanks for doing that. So we're going to use it, and I'm going to talk about it a little later. I have an iClicker 2, mine is blue. This is the, you know, instructor's iClicker. And I can use it to go through my PowerPoints, which I could actually use. And we will use programs for our class interaction means that we will, you guys are going to have to write like short, small programs at some point. And we also have written some programs to maybe model some concepts or make them visual for you. And I think I haven't sent out a link to that page, but I will. Also, I'm recording all the lectures. So if you guys miss a lecture, you can go back home, listen to it. I will upload the audio, and you can go over it and listen to it. And yeah. Okay. So the course goals are so that we will present you the cool ideas, the cool facts that make, you know, computer science a discipline. So most people think that computer science is about computers, and I really like this quote that says computer science is no more about computers then astronomy is about telescopes. So computers are a tool that, you know, we use in computer science. There's a big connection between computer science and computers, but it's not just about computers and how to use them. There was computer science before there were computers, actually. So we're going to see some of these ideas that make computer science a discipline. And you probably can't see this, but this is a cool t-shirt that I saw somebody wear. It says, "No, I will not fix your computer." So my family is trying to get me to fix it when their computer crashes, and I can't do it. I don't know how to, I don't think I've ever installed Windows or anything. And I can't really fix a computer. So, you know, they're very surprised. How come you're doing computer science and you can't? So we're going to see, you know, what I actually, you know, have studied and study. So, yeah. Are there any questions so far? These are a few other courses that have as target the undergraduates and that are meant to be their first, maybe only, class, computer science class at Rutgers. So I'm just giving you some options. This one is a seminar on computers and society, and it's answering the question, what impacts have computer had on the world? So basically it's talking about the world and looking at how the world has been changed by computers. It's not really about computers. There is Introduction to Computer Science, and I think initially this class was meant to be called that, but the name was already taken. And this class actually teaches you how to write your own software. So after you're finishing this class, you will know, if you take it, you will know, okay, I have a problem, how do I write a program to help me solve the problem? And there's also Introduction to Computers and Their Applications, and that introduces you to the latest computer technology. So how, this is like the most useful class, I think. How to use, you know, Word, PowerPoint, that kind of thing. So these are the other Introduction to Computer Science classes. And you guys can, if you think that any of these match what you want to do better than this one, you can, I'm not sure if it's too late to switch to one of these, or, you know, take them both. As opposed to the other classes, this class is asking the question, what is computer science? And what makes it fun and interesting? And how is it different from software engineering? Software engineering being the discipline that teaches you how to write your own software. And what are the insights that make computer science its own academic discipline, right? So if it's not about, you know, fixing a computer, what is it about? Going back to iClickers, I think if you haven't purchased one, you can still find them at the bookstores. What I like about them is that if most classes use them, most classes who use an iClicker, a clicker, use iClicker. So you might be able to use them at a, you know, a class in the future, or you can sell them, and they are the most popular clicker at Rutgers. So the problem is if you have attended a class before that had a different kind of clicker, the clickers are not compatible, so you need an iClicker for this class. So you have to get an iClicker anyway if you don't have it already. I recommend that if you guys have an iClicker, that you put a tape on top of the ID number that's at the bottom with the barcode, so that, you know, this gets erased very easily, I heard. And so you have it for future. You've probably seen the people who have gone online to register. You need your clicker ID, and if you don't have it, there's a lookup tool, but I think it's better to have it. So you can do that. So we will use them for attendance, and for maybe I'll have some questions in class to make sure that everybody got what I was talking about. And there are some applications that use them. So because there are classrooms that use iClickers, we will use a sub-frequency, which is the base will only take votes that have this sub-frequency, and the sub-frequency is dB. So say in the, you know, if in the other room there's another base and we're both using the same sub-frequency, their votes will be added to our votes and we won't know what's happening. So we should all set, and I'm going to go over this next time, or today, use the sub-frequency dB, and you have instructions on the back of your iClicker about how to change it. You basically hold the on-off key, and it starts, the power, you know, light starts blinking, and then you can type, you know, you can press D and then B, and it's all set. Make sure, you might not remember this, but make sure when you're voting that the vote status light is green. If it's red, that means that, you know, your sub-frequency is not compatible with a bass or something happened. So we'll go over this again. So, but just so you know, the sub-frequency is dB. That is the website. That is how your iClicker, what your iClicker looks like or will look like. Okay, so this is one of the most important slides that, you know, our students they really appreciate, is how we're going to grade in this class. It's equally divided between class participation, homework, the midterm, and the final. So I have the dates for the midterm and the final there, and the times, so you know exactly, you know, mark your calendars. In the syllabus, I tried to write down the dates when your homeworks will be released and due, so you know exactly to plan ahead, or, you know, some people like that. The final, there will be, for the midterm, you'll have the material for the first half of the class, or however much we cover until the midterm. And the second, the final will have, you know, material from the first part of the class and the second part of the class. So basically, the first part of the class gets reinforced twice. And the second part of the class is a little harder, so, you know, they'll get everybody's grades up, I think. So, more about class participation. There will be about 5 questions, multiple choice questions, covering the material from the last class. And you will use the iClickers. And if you can answer the questions in class. And if you get all of them wrong, you get 8 points out of 10. If you get all of them right, you get 10 points out of 10. Now, if you're sick or if you can't come to lecture, you can listen to the podcast. You can listen to the audios and answer the questions at home on Sakai. There will be quizzes set up with the same exact questions. But when you answer at home, you can only get 8 points out of 10 for answering all of them right, and 0 if you answer all of them wrong. So it's better to come to lectures. And it's really highly recommended. There is no textbook. So this is the only opportunity you have to understand the material. Right, so you all have lecture notes. You can go to TA's office hours, but if you don't want to waste time, you can just come here, and it's better. If you're at home, you can't ask a question. I'm sorry, can you go over that again? Okay, so the homeworks, I plan to have the first homework the end of January. I said January 31st, so we'll see how that goes. And you'll have about 1 or 2 weeks, hopefully 2 weeks, for each. And as soon as one homework will be due, the other one, the next one will be posted. And I try to have not have homework over break. The midterm is right before break, so you'll have the break. You know, no homeworks over the break, but you'll have a homework after the break. So you will write down your answers in a text file and upload it on Sakai. And you may need to run programs in the Scratch. Has anybody tried Scratch? Okay. You have? Okay. What do you think? Is it hard?
For me, it was complicated at first, but then, like, as you find not patterns, but, like, as you start playing around with things, I guess it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is. It's really easy, and we'll have a whole lecture to go over how things work in Scratch. Exams will be questions in the exam will be modeled after homework questions. So if you know how to do the homework questions, you will know how to do the exams. There will be no surprises, and you always have opportunities for homework to, you know, to ask, come to office hours, ask questions. For me, I have TA'd for this class before. It never happened that somebody came to office hours, had a question, and the question, they haven't understood the problem after they left. And that never happened to me. So I encourage you to take advantage of that. And, you know, even if you sit here and you don't understand, you know, let us know. And, you know, we'll try to do something about it. You know, we'll go slower or we'll try to have more examples. And so, you know, homeworks are not just good because, you know, you get points for them, but also because you can practice for the final, for the exam. So, make sure you do that. So my goal today is to get you guys to a feel of what this lecture, what this class is about. I know that a lot of people take a lot of classes. You have, you know, a lot of work. So the, you know, the last thing you need is a class that you don't need, right? So I'm just trying to make sure that you understand what this class is. So I had a survey set up or a quiz with to get feedback. I don't think a lot of people took it. They had expectations. I mean, I asked what are their expectations from this class. Some people don't know what it is. So a lot of people in the past have enjoyed it. You know, they thought it was really interesting and challenging. Some people thought it was more math, even though I personally don't think it's a lot of math, but the math that is pretty important. So one person told us last semester that this class is everything you never wanted to know about computer science. And I think that what she meant was this is really, it doesn't really, you know, it's not very useful. It doesn't teach you how to use, you know, I'm going to teach you how to use this device, okay, or this software. You know, it doesn't teach you that. It talks about, you know, how does Google work, right? So some people are that kind of people. They're just like, oh, I wonder how a computer works. And they, if you want to know that, if you're interested in that, then this is the right class for you. Okay. So I'm going to go over the syllabus real quick. The first part of the class, we're going to talk about the basic level of information. So the bits are the smallest unit of information. And we will see how we can go from physical things in the world to bits, to information. When we bring together a whole bunch of bits, we process them using logic gates. And we will talk about logic gates, and a whole bunch of logic gates create the basic architecture of a computer. So the microprocessor is a whole bunch of gates, tons of them, and so on. And now having a theoretical computer, we'll go to the third step and try to figure out how to tell the computer what to do, what we want it to do. So which is called programming. And then afterwards, we will say, okay, how do we define a problem? What is a problem and how do we define it so that the computer understands it and knows how to solve it? The next question, how many kinds of computation are there? So what does it mean to compute something? What does it mean to solve a problem? What exactly happens in that process? Al Turing is a guy who invented a computer before computers ever existed. He has this theoretical model of a computer, and it turns out, so this question, he made a Turing machine. That's what it was called. Everything a computer can do, a Turing machine can do. So it's a very powerful model before even computers were invented. That's pretty amazing. So, you know, that's how you can see that, you know, computer science is not just, you know, computers. And also, okay, so next one, we'll talk about bits and messages. How do we communicate between computers and other devices? How do we, secret codes, how do we do that? Next one will be computers working together, and we'll see how that happens, and we'll see how a whole bunch of computers working together work better than one computer, just one computer solving the same problem. Afterwards, we'll talk about computers that learn and adapt. So the classical way of doing computer science or programming is you tell exactly the computer what you want it to do. You can set up a computer so that it's gets, you know, reinforcement from its world. It gets data, and it figures out how to do its job better, so it changes. And if we have time, we will go into programs that evolve, and right. So any questions about the administrative part of any kind, you know, any questions about homeworks or grading or, you know, anything you wanted to know in this learning? Yes. What do you mean?
You said in the beginning, well, some say it's more math, but it's going to be like...
Right. So it's just, you know, it's the math kind of homework. So, you know, you have a problem, what are you, we're going to have an example later in the class of something that would come up in the homework. Not essays, not, I don't know. So, yeah. Yes. When are the office hours? They're in the syllabus. We have office hours every day of the week. Mine are Tuesdays, 3 to 4:30. And, you know, Chris has office hours Mondays and Wednesdays. Yan has office hours Fridays. And Shenghu has office hours Thursday, right? Okay. Yes. It's on the website. I guess you weren't registered before.
Is it on Sky?
It's not on Sky.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah, there was some kind of error when I tried to upload it, so I will send me email. Do you know my email? Is my email anywhere? No. Okay. Maybe I'll send an updated syllabus to the whole class. Are you registered, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other? Okay. All right, so we can move on. So this is a slide that basically it says, you know, computers are obviously everywhere. Why do we care about them? Because they are obviously, you know, very present in our everyday lives. In 1977, this person is the president of, the first computer, industry company said there is no reason for any individual to have a computer in his home. And today, I look at this, and to me it seems very funny because we have so many computers. We have, that's in the upper left corner. It's a car, and some cars have computers on board. Some cars you just, press an on button to start it, like just like a computer. And, navigates, and it helps you do all these things. iPods are computers. I think on the bottom left corner, that's the computers they use at the grocery store when they scan your products. Those are computers, a PDA. And the calculators and cell phones. So people who have clickers, please set your sub-frequency to dB. And I will start. Okay, so this tells you, this is a little screen that says, hold your on-off button for 2 seconds, etc. So follow those instructions. Everybody okay with setting up the sub-frequency? Any questions? So, you're going to get used to it, probably. Alright. So how many computers are with you right now? So you have laptops, you could have a cell phone, you could have a GPS, MP3 player. Maybe 45 seconds. Anybody who hasn't set up their frequency? Do you? No? Okay. So I'm going to stop this. Okay. So this says that. So we have 29 votes. people have one computer, 17 people have two computers, 4 people have 3, and 2 people have 4 and more. How do we figure out how many people on how many computers on average per person? Does anybody know how to do that? So how many devices do we have in total? Say that E was 4. How many?
60.
Okay. How did you do that? Who answered the question? Okay. How did you figure out how many? Okay. Okay, 6 was 3. So this is 34. 6 plus 34 is 40. This is 12 plus 8 is 20. What did I do? Oh. I think I... 2 times 4. So we have 40 plus 20, 60 computers. Now how many computers per person on average? So, I'm sorry. The number of people who voted was 29. Okay, so 60 over, so average number of computers per person. 60 over 29? About 2. That's pretty good. A little bit more than 2. Right, so, you know, contrast with 1977, nobody should have, there's no reason for anybody to have one computer in their home. And now we each have, family member has at least 2. Using computers, we can do things that were previously unthinkable. Does anybody know what that image on the upper left corner is? It's a lion. But, you know, it's really the computers. It's Aslan from the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie. And it's a lion that doesn't exist, right? They use computers to generate it. And it looks incredibly real. Like, people run their, you know, hands through their through his hair, and it looks like a real lion. But, you know, they use computers to figure out the texture of his hairs to just make it look like a real lion. Down here to the left, maybe I should turn off some of that. Okay. So, you see, that's a robot performing surgery on a person. I think there is some doctor remotely that kind of controls the robot. It sees what's happening. But it's still amazing that you can do, you know, perform high, you know, precision surgery from a distance. And of course you have the iPhone and Google, right? Google has changed the world pretty much. It's impossible to do Google without computers. Okay, so now I have a video to show you. So this is a video that was that is showing. They shot Superman, and they needed Marlon Brando for the sequel, which was filmed in 2006, I think it came out. But he died in 2004, and they needed him to say a line, which is, "You do not know me," I think. So they had all these shots from his previous movies, but he was never saying, "You do not know me." So they had to figure out how to take those shots and, make him say, "You do not know me." And this video should show how they did it.
"You do not remember me."
Or, "You do not remember me," sorry. So they had all these shots from... of him from previous movies, but he was never saying, "You know, remember me." So they took a shot where his eyes or his face acted like saying, "You do not remember me." It was compatible with saying, "You do not remember me." They digitally removed his mouth. And they made this model of his face so that they can turn it around. And they matched it on his face, and now they had like the 3D model of his face. So now they can move it around and make all kinds of, you know, rotations and things on it. You know, they arrange it. They, you know, take care of the shades and colors and make him look all real. And now they need to figure out how to make his mouth say, "You do not remember me." So they take the "You do not remember me," they take all the sounds, and they look for each sound, they look in the previous shots where that sound was, he was saying that sound, right? The phonemes. And then they glued all those things together to say, "You do not remember me." And then there's all the touch-ups with, you know, making his mouth look real. And then obviously his face doesn't match his mouth. So they have to like make that transition smooth. You know, it looks rubbery. You need to be a perfectionist to do this kind of thing. So now it actually looks like he's saying, "You do not remember me."
"You do not remember me."
Now they make sure he says the same thing or looks real from all angles that they need him to. That's kind of weird. So they have him in this crystal so they can have the scene that they need to have. That's probably Superman.
"You do not remember me." Embedded in the crystal form is the total accumulation of all literature and scientific fact from dozens of other.
So they did all that using computers. Okay, so this is, we could do this with clickers, but I'm just going to do it, I'm just going to tell you what the answer is. So in a word, computer science is a study of A, programming, B, communication, C, reduction, D, automation, E, acceleration. And computer science is related to all of those issues, of all of those, things. But what the computer science is mostly about is about reduction. And this idea of reduction is taking a hard problem and dividing it into easier, say we have a hard problem that we don't know how to solve, we divide it into simpler problems, and maybe we know how to solve those problems. If we do, it's great, we solve the problem. If we don't, we just go and keep dividing the problems until we know how to do them, right? And I'm going to show this in a few examples a little later. So obviously programming is a big part of computer science today. It's not, though, computer science is not the study of programming. Communication is also a big part. There's all kinds of computer in the world. They communicate, but, you know, still no. Automation, you know, computer science helps a lot with, you know, in factories, if, you know, people are, you know, there's many, you know, tasks that people could do, but, you know, computers are better at them. And acceleration, you know, computers can do things really fast. So C is the right answer. So I guess I've said that before. Computer scientists solve problems by reducing them to simpler problems. And, you know, it's also about speed because people, you know, computer scientists also care about how fast can I solve a problem. You know, if I have a problem and it takes me 100 years to solve it, that's not a very good solution to the problem. The problem because I'm going to be dead by the time my problem is solved. So I want something that will work fast. Okay, so these are a few examples. And I will just talk about the third one, which is what we are going to go through in this class. So, you know, we have different levels of complexity. At the very basic level, this is the physical level. It's how information is transmitted at a very basic physical, you know, electric wires, you know, level. On top of that level, there's the logic blocks that take the bits, that take the information and process it, and they are used to process information. On top of the logic blocks, after we created the computer, we have a programming language, or called machine language, which is also a very, very basic programming language. And on top of that, there are high-level programming languages and applications. So, for example, you know, if somebody has no idea about programming or, you know, they just want to use an editing software, they're a writer, for example. They don't know, you know, they have the software, they learn how to use it. They don't know how that software makes the bits, you know, circulate on the wires. So they're just interested in using a software that will help them write fast. But there are some people who are interested in building blocks. They actually make circuits and work at a very low level. And I also, these are all examples from computer science. But I also have an example from, for example, recipes. So you have the basic elements, which are, you know, the basic things you find at the, you know, grocery store. You can be the one of those people who make everything from scratch, or you can make your life easier and just go to the store and buy it. And this is my comparison between making pizza and computer science. So the very basic level, as I said, you have the ingredients, the most basic ingredients, and I call this level the assembler. The assembler can make the dough or you can make the sauce. And, you know, they have a pretty hard job, right? I think it's hard to make things from scratch. Then you have the pizza creator, which can be, say, if I want to open a restaurant, I can have a person who, I can hire, you know, somebody to make the dough, somebody to make the sauce, and I can hire a person to put it all together, right? And a pizza creator doesn't need to know how the dough is made or how the sauce is made. It just has a pile of dough, the pot of sauce, and it just puts it all together. Then there's a pizza baker, you know, which could be the pizza creator or it could be somebody else. And then you have the waiter. Say if you go out to eat pizza, there's a waiter who brings it, you know, from the oven to the table. So the same way, I think, bits are the basic building blocks of information. Bits are used by logic gates, which take bits and process the information. And we're actually going to go over each of these layers in this class. Logic gates all create the basic architecture of a computer. So, you know, processor, the memory, everything that is the basic architecture of a computer. Then when we have a computer, we use programming to tell it what to do. You know, So the programmer doesn't necessarily need to know, you know, for example, what logic gates are in, you know, in your computer, in your microprocessor. They just program and create software. And then the computer software, which somebody who's even not interested in programming can use and have successful use. And I will explain the idea of reduction by giving an example with barcodes. So barcodes are a very good example of reduction, and this kind of problem is going to be in the homework, and I'm going to show exactly the type of problem that you're going to have in the homeworks and in the exams. UPC stands for Universal Product Code, and in America, the most widely used is the UPC-A. You can actually, there's a whole bunch of different barcodes. Does anybody have some kind of, I see a few water bottles or a notebook. I have a water bottle, but it doesn't have, we need the one with 11 digits. So, 12 actually. So you have a one digit, then there's a space, then there's a group of five, then there's another space, then there's another group of five. There's another digit. So there's one, a five, five, and one. I'm gonna need that. Okay, you do? What is it?
Zero.
Tell me all the digits except for the last one. Okay?
Zero, 43, 100, 33, 106.
Okay, that's it. And then there's another digit. I'm going to see how we have a magic trick to find out what that digit is. I mean, you can look at the bottle, but if you don't have the bottle, you can figure it out. So there, barcodes are used very widely because they can be read by machines. That's the only reason. Before barcodes, I think they used to, every product had a code. They used to, you know, people at the, when you go to pay, they would type the code, right? So then there's a lot of errors. You know, you pay $100 for a water bottle because you type, you know, the price for something that's $100, and you don't like that. People don't like that. So they figured out a way for computers to read barcodes. This is a stamp. You probably know that you can print them out online. You can purchase them online and print them out. Your checks are the same way. The reason why these digits are so weird on your checks is because they're very easy to read by computers, and they can be read by people too. If you go, you know, if you fly, there's a, you know, the boarding passes have barcodes. The remote controls, you know, send signals to, you know, whatever they're controlling using some kind of code, using infrared light. So apparently the first canned product was Wrigley's gum in 1974. So I said before, it's a method of identifying products by 11-digit numbers, and they are very easy to read by machine. So, applying this idea of reduction, right? You have, at the highest level, you have a bottle of water. It's a bottle of water?
No, it was a folder.
It's a folder, okay. At the highest level, you have a folder, and you want to know how you go from folder to ink. How does that work? So, lowest level, you have ink. The ink is just a whole bunch of zeros and ones, the patterns of sequence of zeros and ones, and we're going to see how that works. And we can call them bits. The 95 zeros and ones are translated into 12 digits in a way that we're going to see how. And the 12 digits are actually, we only need 11 because the 12 is just a sanity check, as we're going to see. And then the 11 digits are interpreted as the name and type and manufacturer of the product. So these are two examples. Pond's dry skin cream, which has a certain weight. And the manufacturer, you have the manufacturer there. And you have name badge labels, a certain size, a certain number. Obviously, probably, if you're at the store, you know, if you have Pond's dry skin cream and you have different weights, those are going to be different codes because they're different prices and you need them to be different prices. So, you have an 11-digit number, right? 11-digit number, each digit can be 0 or 1 through 9, right? How many numbers can you what's the total number of numbers you can represent with 11 digits? So you have a choice between one with 10 zeros, one with 11 zeros, you know, 999, 10 nines. So the way, yeah.
Well, that depends on the base that you're using, doesn't it?
You're using base 10. Do you know the answer?
If you change them all to nines.
Okay, so what happens if you have one digit, right? How many numbers, if you had just one digit, how many numbers can you represent? Right. So if you have, I'm going to write here. Okay, one digit. You can have 10 numbers, right? 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If you have two digits, you have, the first one is 0, 0, and the last one is 9, 9. How many numbers are there between 0 and 99? 100. Right? Okay. Does anybody can? Do you see the pattern here? What about three digits? We have numbers from 000 to 9999. And that's how many numbers? 1,000. So, can anybody tell me what if you have 11 digits? Okay, go ahead.
10 to the 11, or one
right.
With 11 zeros.
So you have a 1 with 11 zeros. Right? Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So that's the correct. The correct answer would be B in this case. Okay? Clear? Okay. So there's a lot of products that we can have. So this is what the digits mean when you have the code. The first six digits are, you know, called the manufacturer's digits. So we have a code here. If the first digit is 0 or 1 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9, that's most products. If you have 2, that it's a store use. So for example, if you go to the deli at the grocery store, and, you know, they weigh some, whatever, you buy ham, and they put a barcode, the code is going to start with a 2. And the 3 are drugs by national drug code number. Okay? So this is what is this thing that I'm buying? It doesn't say too much. And the last 5 digits, I guess I didn't say here, but this is the code for the company. Right, so if you buy something by Coca-Cola, two different products are going to have the 5 digits identical because they're the same produced by the same company. And then these, the next five digits, are assigned by the factory. So say I wanted to start a bakery, right? And I wanted to I'm getting one of these codes, and I'm asking for a code, and I'm going to get this a unique code that nobody has. And then all my products, I can have, how many products will I have here? Well, it's 5 digits, right? So it's going to be 1 with 5 zeros. That's 100,000 products, different products I can have, right? That's a lot of products. So, yeah. I'm sorry? So the 2 is the first, if the first digit is a 2, that's just, so if you look at the code, my water is not good, but if the first digit is a 2, that's a store, internal product of the store, you know? Okay. Any other questions? Okay, so for example, for the labels, that's the code on the labels, and 0727820514400. 0 is the fact that it's a general. 72782 is Avery. That's the code for the company. And then, you know, the rest of it is Avery's code for the labels. The Ponce, you know, apparently it's a drug, and that the, you know, the company has a code, and the national code for this product is, drug code is 04300. So why do we need, we actually need 12 digits here. If we said that UPC is an 11-digit code, but we actually need 12. Why do we need 12? Well, if what happens, so, okay, we chose four different products. They are different things, right? So there's lime juice, Frank's, and, you know, Reese's peanut butter, eggs, and salmon, right? The codes are identical except for the second digit, right? What happens if the machine reads it wrong, right? So what happens if two products that are very different in price, you know, you buy, you know, salmon, and it scans the, you know, the code for a laptop. You go to Target, they have everything there, and you're charged, you know, $2,000. You know, that's ridiculous. So we need some kind of sanity check, right? We need some kind of, some extra information so that we don't make that mistake. So what do we do? This is how this digit is computed. It's saying add the digits in the odd numbered positions, first, third, fifth, and so on, and multiply by 3. And you guys don't have to write this down. The lectures, I'm going to post them. So, I mean, if you want to write it down, that's fine. Okay. Then to that, you add the digits in the even numbered positions. Okay, so the second, the fourth, and then you subtract the result from the next higher multiple of 10. And I think I'm, okay, so this is the code that we have. That's 01660, that's a code, a barcode, right? The 11, it's exactly 11 digits. Take the red ones are the even, the numbers, the digits in the even positions, the gray ones are the numbers in the odd positions, right? So we said the first, what would we do first? We take the numbers in the odd, in the odd positions, and we sum them up and we multiply by 3. So that is the gray ones. So we have 0 plus 6, da da da, is 6. They're mostly 0, right? Then we multiply by 3. No, we don't. We do the even numbers, even digits, right? So those are the red ones. And that gives us 14. We do 3 times even, 3 times odd plus even is 6 times, 3 times this one plus this one, it gives us 32. And then subtract from next multiple of 10, right? Next multiple of 10, it's 40. So it's the multiple of 10, the smallest multiple of 10 that is bigger than this number. So that gives us 8, and that is our check digit for this one. So for the Franks, it's 5, for the chocolate eggs, it's 4, and for the salmon, it's 1, and now they all are 2 digits different from each other. So we can't just make a mistake. You know, if, say, the computer reads the first digit wrong, it has, internally, it can compute the check digit, and it sees that the check digit is not matching the check digit that it has. So you can figure out, you know, I'm sure you went to the grocery store and, you know, the person scans it and it's beeping, you know, okay, scan it again. And then they scan it again until, you know, the computer, you know, machine figures out that it's the right, they have the right code. So I'm going to do it with this example to illustrate. And this is the kind of problem you're going to have in the homework. You know, speaking of the kind of exercise. Okay, so I'm going to circle the odd, the digits in the odd position. So I have the first one, I have the third one, the fifth one. Okay, so I'm adding them together. So I have 0 plus 3 plus 0 plus 3. Plus 1, plus 6. 10, 13. Okay? Okay. The next ones are these are the, so these, this is 1, 2, right? So these are the evens. The odds, 4 plus 1 plus 0 plus 3 plus 0. And that is 8. Okay? These are the digits, oh, what did I do? I didn't see the 0, right? So these are, so I took all the even positions and I added up the digits. I took all the odds and I added up the digits, and this is what I'm getting. Okay? And then I multiply odd times 3 plus even gives me 13 times 3 plus 8. 39 plus 8. 47. Okay? What is the next multiple of 10? 50, right? So how much do I have to add to 47 to get 50? 3, okay. So I'm gonna say 47 plus 3 equals 50. And that is the check digit. Is it a 3? Yes, okay. All right. I don't know. Does that make sense? Yes, no? Okay, well, there's gonna be clicker questions. Okay. This is some stuff about, does anybody have the time?
It's 4:13.
4:13, thank you. Okay. Okay, 4:17, great. So this is mod. I don't know if you've ever heard, some people might have heard of, mod math. So this means that, you know, if you add something mod 10, for example, mod math is like regular math, but you things wrap around. So, you know, you go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, you know, then you don't go 10, you go 0. And then you don't go 11, you go 1, and so on. So you can, if you want to know what the mod of a number is, it's you divide it by 10 and take the remainder. Okay. So now what is the check digit for the code 0, all zeros? What do you... Should be easy to do in your head. 0, 0. Right. Because it's, 3 times 0 plus 0. It's 0. Okay, what happens if the check digit, if you add to an odd position digit, right? So, you have a... to the odds, that's going to be like mod, so see how it's 10 minus 3, right? 10 minus 3 is 7, okay? What happens if I add 1 to the even? So, even, say I change this one. So odds will be 0, evens will be 1, 3 times odds plus even will be 1. So how much is the check digit? 9, right? So this is like subtracting 1 in mod math. Anyway, you can figure this out, If I give you a code, you'll figure it out. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you ready? Okay. Right, so now let's see how we go to ink, right? So this is how they do, they actually figure out the 95 bits, right? So remember we said there's ink. Ink represents 95 zeros and ones. The 95 zeros and ones represent 12 digits. And we figure out how to go from 11 digits to 12 digits, right? So now we have 12 digits. What do we do with them? So we have, say the 12 digits are A, B, C, D, E, F, G. We just name them, right? We name this one A, we name this one B, we name this one C, and so on. And this is how the code actually, what's happening to the code. You put a 101, then you put the first six ones after that. So it's going to be, you know, for this case, it's going to be, you know, maybe this is a bad example, but you know, it's going to be 101, then the first six. And what happens to the first, okay, and then 01010, and then the next ones. And we're just going to say there's G, so there's the last six, right? So we put these, and then we put these, and there's all these, right? So then 01001. Okay, and then the next ones, right? And then a 101. But here, we don't just put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because we can't, bits are just zeros and ones. So this is a translation from the digits to zeros and ones, right? So if this is a, okay, so this is a zero, the translation of zero is 0001101. So this is going to be a zero, you know? So 00101. And then, you know, one, which is going to be 001100, right? So we translate each digit of the code into a sequence of 7 bits, okay? 7 zeros and ones. And all these have two properties. They all start with a 0 and end with a 1, and there's a switch from 0 and 1 to 1 twice in each code, right? So here, you switch to 1 once, you switch to 0 twice, and you switch to 1 again, right? So you switch from 0 to 1 once, you switch from 1 to 0 two times, from 0 to 1 twice, sorry. You switch from 0 to 1 here, and you switch from 0 to 1 here. You switch from 0 to 1 here, and you switch from 0 to 1 here, and so on. So it's, yeah. And none of these codes is the reverse of the other of one of the other ones. So it's never the case that when you choose two codes, they're the reverse of each other. So for the last six digits, they're actually reversed, and I'm going to try to explain why. So if the code, sometimes when you scan, you know, you don't want to just scan. Sometimes you scan like this, and sometimes you scan like this, right? So the machine needs to be able to figure out when is it reversed, when is, you know, what is the actual code, and you can actually figure it out if things are set up this way. So from our 12-digit number, how many bits, zeros and ones? How long is the code now, right? So how many bits were for each letter, for each digit? So these are the digits, right? So how many bits do you have? You have 101 there, so you have 3. Then you have 6 times 7. So each digit has 7 bits. So because we have 6 digits, we'll need 6 times 7, 42. Then we have 0101, that's how many? 5. Okay, and then we have another 42, and then we have another 3, and hopefully this works out. Okay, so that's 45, 50, 95, let's see, right, does that make sense? Yeah, it's probably 96. I probably forgot one. Anyway. So then ink, what happens with ink? Then you have 95 bits, and you each one is gets represented by a thin line of ink. Like sometimes you have very thin lines, sometimes you have a little thicker lines. That's two ones in a row. And the zeros are a space. So, you know, you got this 96 zeros, 95 zeros and ones. I got that right, 95. I don't know what that was. 95 zeros and ones, and then you have, you know, for a zero you have a space, for a one you have a bar, and the max, some bars are kind of thick. The way the codes are set up is that the it can't be more ones, there can't be more than four ones in a row. Okay, so if you stare at the code, you'll see that they're different widths, and that's what that means. Okay. So, for the skin cream, you know, there's this. This is what you go through when you do that. And you can check it for yourself. You don't need to know this. You need to know how to find the check digits, or if you know the check digits, if there's a missing digit, how do you find it? But this is what you do, and then at the end, you have the small zeros and ones on the at the top, and this is what the code will look like. And there is a demo online where you can enter your barcode, and you can see that, you know, it's actually, it looks like, it's going to look like the one that you have on the bottle of water. Any questions? Yes. It's kind of, like zeros and ones are binary, right? So it's not the classical, how do we convert between base 10 and base 2, but it's a way to go from decimal to binary. Okay, so this is a summary. These are going to be online. And there's also a web page where this is explained again. I'll show you the. Can you come after the class? Yeah.
So all the responses
learn
the check
digit. You need to know how to like turn it into ones and zeros. I just wanted to show how you.
You don't need to know
that. I just wanted to show you how you can go, this idea of reduction again, how you can go from, you know, can of a folder to ink, right? Okay? Any other questions?
Well, all we have to know is how to convert it into ones.
Yeah, from this class. Okay. And I will try, besides sometimes it's weird with homeworks, we've had problems before, I will set up a test homework, so you guys can upload a file with just your name to the homework. I'm going to send email about that. And, yeah. You can all register at Clickers, too, if you haven't done that before.